I'm Kimberly Amici. Welcome to the Build Your Best Family podcast. This is a practical show to help you imagine, plan, and build your best family. We believe that the secret to having a happy family is not being perfect, but having purpose. Each week, I'll be here sharing with you lessons I've learned, conversations I've had that will equip you to create new habits, challenge mindsets, and build relationships that will allow your family to thrive. Our home environment shapes our well-being, behavior, and overall life satisfaction. Yet many of us settle for living in spaces that we just don't love. We may believe that decorating or taking care of house stuff just isn't our forte, leading us to settle for the surroundings that lack the elements that truly bring us joy. New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author Michael Lynn Smith, known as the Cozy Minimalist, is here with me today to encourage us to do what we know, use what we have, and finish what we've started. In her new book, House Rules, and in our conversation today, she helps us to understand why we love or don't love our spaces. She also helps us to gain the freedom and confidence we need to make functional and beautiful changes in our home and give us ideas and solutions to help develop our style and feel proud of our home. Welcome, Michaelyn. It's incredible to have you on the podcast today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so a question we ask all of our guests is, what is your family known for?
Well, I think that we're known for hosting and having people at our house, adults, kids, animals, everyone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fantastic. And you have older children, I believe, right?
I do. They're like basically adults. I don't know. Our two oldest, actually, we just moved to this house a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And we moved, you know, about an hour and a half away. And my two oldest boys both had a job. One lived in another state and they both moved here with us. So they moved back home, live with mom and dad again to start a business. Wow. And then our youngest son is a senior in college, so he still has a room here. So it's like old times. I have all three of my boys home again, and it's kind of nice, actually.
Oh, I bet. I have two in college and then one still in high school. And we're already like, okay, so when you graduate, what are you going to do? You're going to move back here? I am not one of those parents who are like, oh, good riddance. They, you know, go on, have yourself a life. Like, I'm like, oh, we could start a business together. We could do this together. I could babysit your kids when you have children. Like, I'm already... Like, okay, mom.
It's a different life.
Yes. So I get it. I mean, like, there is, you know, we're already talking about what's going to happen in, you know, a year and a half. And do you want to come home? And do you, you know, all those things. So yes, I totally got you there. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your background first. So you're here to talk to us about house rules, and it obviously has to do with the home, but go ahead and give us just because your journey has changed a little bit, right? So like, I'm just going from memory here, but years ago you rented a home. Okay. And then your mission was to make it your own, even though you couldn't knock down walls and do all these things that you were seeing on Pinterest and on HGTV. And so you became passionate about that. And then since then, I remember when you paid off your debt, right? And you were able to buy a home, and now you're in I've been to the barn, right? I almost forgot to tell you that. I've been to probably two or three Hope Riders.
Okay.
So I have been to your barn, and then you've moved again. And so you've gone through iterations of your journey in this area. And so could you just give us a quick background, not necessarily your bio, but just how'd you get here?
Well, you know, those three houses were just the last three. This is our house. My husband is a visionary and entrepreneur. We moved a lot. And yeah, a few houses ago, we had big business debt to pay off. We finally got it paid off and moved out of a rental and into a fixer-upper. And we've had all different kinds of houses. And I'm a house girl. I've never met a house I didn't love. I believe every home has potential. Every home has a silver lining. And I see the world through home colored glasses. So it's all I write about. It's all I talk about. Oh my gosh, I'm no fun. I just love everything house and home. I love decor. I love minimalism. I love cosifications. I love it all. And that's what I do is I teach online. I have a private community. I have classes. I write books. I talk about home on Instagram. It's just a bit much.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's where we have our
most incredible moments, the tough times, the great times. I mean, it really is where our heart is, for sure. And not to sound cliche, but it's like, I get that so much.
It's where we live most of our lives, and it really affects us. James Clear says, environment is the invisible hand that shapes human behavior. And man, I don't think we need, we all, when we hear that, we're like, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So what motivated you to write this most recent book called House Rules? And what was the idea behind it?
Well, I've written a couple books and I thought, I am done writing books. And I met a reader who had my books and she said, I have your books, but I wasn't really born with a decorating gene. So they're just sitting pretty on my coffee table. And I didn't hear anything else she said, because all I could think of was, as a person who feels like they teach stuff in approachable decorating about home, I just thought I had completely failed, because we all know there's actually no such thing as a decorating gene, but it does feel like some people naturally know how to do it and the rest of us are stuck with an ugly house. And that is 100% not true. So it just like totally refreshed my energy of, how do I get the message out that decorating is a skill that you can learn and that no one was born with a decorating gene? How do some people, were they naturally inclined and have been doing this for 25 years, evaluating and figuring out why things don't look right? Yes. But for the rest of us, we had to learn, just like we've had to learn how to spell words in elementary school, learn I before E, except after C. And then we use that rule. So that's what I did. I wrote 100 house rules that apply to every home, every style, and every budget, just like I before E, except after C, applies to the word that has I and E and C in it, no matter if you're writing a resume or if you're writing a note to your mom or an Instagram post, it applies. It's the same with house rules, and they're really helpful.
Yeah. No, that's great. I was thinking about the opposite as well. I know a few people who think that they know about design, and then they'll do things and they'll spend the money and it doesn't work for them. So just like it doesn't come naturally to anybody, there are principles that you can engage with that really work and make a difference. So
absolutely. And what's amazing is once you start, I am not a designer by trade. I dropped out of design school. I learned the hard way in my 15 houses.
Yeah.
But what is really interesting is that it's all pretty logical. The island is a certain distance away from the rest of the kitchen because you need a place for two people to walk side by side through. So you need, you know, a certain amount of clearance.
Yeah.
The sconces are at a certain level so that the light bulb isn't shining in. So it makes sense once you learn. And I think that's what helps us say like, oh, it's about form and function. But if you don't know.
Yeah. All right. So you're talking about universal decorating truths. So can you give us a few of those examples and explain how they can apply to any style, any house, any budget? Because I know, like, I'm already hearing objections, which I'm sure you've heard a lot over the years, of like, I'm not in that house yet, or that's, what if that's not my style, or what if I don't have the money for it? So let's talk about some of those principles that apply across the board.
Right. So the rules that I came up with, I really was inspired by the I before E, except after C, or stop, drop, and roll. Those things that we learned in school that they're just like second nature and we repeat them to ourselves and we can't forget about them, but they actually help. So one of my house rules is contrast is queen if you want to be seen. That applies everywhere. So I'm looking at you right now on screen. I know everyone can't see you, but here you are. You've got your beautiful blonde hair in front of a navy wall. I see your millwork is painted white, and so it just pops. Of course, if that was painted the same color as your wall, it would all kind of blend in together. Mm. And that's not a right or wrong. It's a decision that you made based on where you want my eyes to go. Even if you're not thinking that specifically, you might just know, I love a room that doesn't have a lot of things happening. So you might want everything more of the same color. Or if you want to draw attention to something, then you're going to create high contrast. Again, this is not about a specific style. It's just a logical decorating truth. And it really does apply.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good to know. You know, when we did a big renovation on this home, and I want to use color. Like, I love color, but there's not a lot of color in my main living space. This is an office. I wanted to go bold in here, but I didn't want to go bold in other areas of the house. So there were choices that were on purpose about what is it that I want to achieve in this room and to just go for it. But what happened was, is I found myself wanting to use color in other places. And then my one friend, she said to me, if I look at your Pinterest board though, she's like, all the bathrooms you pin have no color. Why are you trying to force color in your bathroom? And I'm like, you're right. I have to use color everywhere just because I used it in my office, you know? And so these things we get stuck in our head that I think it has to be all or nothing. And that's not necessarily true.
I think you're so smart to create a Pinterest board. I think that any room that we're working on, I think that is a wonderful first step because it gives us a vision to go with maybe what we're thinking in our head, but unless we can see it visually, a lot of us don't have direction. I know I do that for every room that I want to create because it does help me say, what are the commonalities? What am I not seeing that I thought I would see? So bravo, really smart.
Yeah. We only had to paint one wall over. Once we got it up, we're like, but all things considered, it wasn't so bad. And we ended up going bolder is what we ended up doing. I played it too safe in my choice and it was the mudroom. So that's a great place to just like, how, and it worked.
Excellent.
So what do you think makes the difference between loving and not loving our spaces?
Ooh, I think when they feel meaningful, when they feel personal, when they feel beautiful to us and functional for our current needs and the people that live in our house. So instead of, you know, maybe the builder put a chandelier in the middle of a room because he thought it would be a dining room, but it's our job to evaluate our spaces and say, is this still serving us in this way? And I think the best houses, the houses that feel like they suit the family, are houses where they've said no, you know, they've ignored the builder or they've made it their own just based on whatever their own quirky, they're all musicians or they all like to play chess and they really made it personal. That's what I find inspirational and what feels like a home that really serves people that live there.
Did you find during COVID that a lot of people were like, either I love my home, it serves me well, or this place does not serve my family well?
Yeah. A lot of the people in the communities I hang out with were like, oh, now I have to face my house and I don't. And I feel, and that makes me sad, but I also think it was so good for our industry because now they had to make a decision. And I think that's a wonderful place to be. I wish we all would force ourselves to make a decision. We've all been that person who's like, well, we're putting the house on the market in a few months. So now I guess I'll finish all my projects. Like, that's a horrible way to live. Let's finish our projects now and enjoy.
Yeah. Oh, we completely experienced that on the last house we were in. And when we got here, I was like, no, we're not doing that again. Like I'm not. And it was small things. It was things that could have, that were totally manageable to do, you know, like a little nook. We wanted to put shelving in and we did it to sell it. And then we wanted to switch out like the vanity and the third floor bathroom. We finally did it. And I was like, what were we thinking living and constantly like kind of having it on our to-do list, not sure if we want to spend the money. And really when we just did it, we loved it. And we were able to use it for like the 4 weeks we were left in the house.
Such a good practice. Like what would I change if I were putting my house on this market? Let's do that for ourselves.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So you guide readers to do what they know, use what they have and finish what they've started, which is amazing because I know a lot of people just don't see what they have to work with. So where do we begin when it comes to this?
Well, you do start with doing what you know. And I think just recognizing that, no, were you born with a decorating gene? No, none of us were, but we do know things. We know what we like about our current rooms. We know maybe which room needs the most attention. Mm-hmm. We know the people that are living in our home and how many and how they need to use the room. We know how to create a Pinterest board. So I think starting with what we know, decorating doesn't start in the furniture store. And I know you know that. Like it starts in our head, in our heart, in the room, with paying attention, with using the items that we have and evaluating. Is this desk still serving me in the right way? Is it too big? Is it too small? Is it too high? Is it too low? How about the sofa? And really taking those things into account and getting things in order in your home so that they look good, yes, but they also serve you and whoever else needs to live there. And that's why, you know, our home is never done. And that's not because we have to keep up with the trends and they all change. I mean, yes, trends are so fun. I think they're delightful, but our homes are never done because our family changes and grows. And that's really a wonderful thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had a friend over today who was just saying, like, they're empty nesters now. And she was like, you know, she told her husband, I think we should do the basement, like finish the basement. And he's like, we have no kids at home. But she said, but they're coming back and they're bringing their friends. So her son's bringing her roommate, his roommates home for Thanksgiving break. And their daughter is, you know, bringing her boyfriend over. And where do they hang out and where are they going to spend time? And so all of a sudden they went all these years without thinking that this was it was necessary. And now it's becoming more of a priority because now they have grown, you know, adult sized children that want to be in their home, but don't necessarily want to always share their space.
Yeah. I mean, way to go for, I think such a big part of our job as people who are caretakers of our home is just paying attention and evaluating and willing to change things.
Yeah. I know, like the playroom becomes the library, becomes the the guest room, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about style. So we're not born with this design gene. And so I know a lot of people immediately have no idea what their style is. They don't even know where to start. They don't even know like what should go together and doesn't matter and who cares. And so people that want to develop their own style, what are some simple steps that they can do to discover what it is that they like?
Well, I like that you said discover, because I think a lot of us, some people feel like, oh, I don't, my style is lost, or, you know, I don't have style, which makes me sad. I think we all have an innate things that we're drawn to. And so I say that you don't have to name your style in order to attain your style, but you do have to be aware of what it is that you're drawn to. So I have some practices for that. Like one way is just to maybe take a few minutes and walk around your house and look for those items in your home. Especially if you've been a homemaker as long as we have, we both have some things that we've used our whole life and we love. We always find a place for them. They are our timeless classics. No matter what the trends are, no matter what McGee and Company is using, no matter what people are painting, what color wood is in, there are some things that we love and we use and we can always work into our home, and we're going to for the rest of our lives, no matter what. Those are our timeless classics. I've got a white dresser that I bought when our son was first born. It's been in the nursery. It's been in the kitchen. It's in my closet now. It's been in the living room. It's just like a simple white dress up with little scallops at the bottom. And it fits in everywhere. And I hope it never falls apart. I've always loved like toile and transfer wear. So those are like some of my timeless classics. Maybe it's a shape or a silhouette. Maybe you love tufting or vintage leather. Or maybe you love a wingback chair. There is something, there is a clue to what you love. You know, another way is just think, if you had $1,000 and could spend it in any furniture store, where would it be? Well, that, you know, Serena and Lily is much different than Crate and Barrel. And so you can look at how they describe their own style and some words that kind of help you hone in. But I also believe that true style is found in the combinations and in what we put together in a room. Maybe you have a beautiful English roll arm sofa. Well, that doesn't mean your style has to be English. It means you get to mix classic pieces together. You can mix mid-century mod. You can mix all of these things. And then that creates your own unique style. That's where the fun happens to me. How you would do an English roll arm, how I would do an English roll arm, and what and how we would use that in our home.
Yeah. You know, one of the favorite things that you've said over the years about taking everything out of the room and then only putting back in what you really want. We did that with my son's bedroom during COVID, because he was like, Mom, I think I want a big boy's room. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is a big, oh no, you're getting big, right? So we took everything out. We repainted the walls, and he was very, and especially kids are really good at this. He was like, nope, yes. Yes, he put only back in the room what he wanted. And then we did some filler pieces, went to Hobby Lobby and got a few things. But that exercise was so incredible, especially to do it with him, because he wasn't so like, well, I paid so much for this and someone gave me this. Like, he did none of that. He was like, this is what I want. And that was such a fun exercise and activity to do with him.
That's really interesting. That's so true. They don't have all that baggage that we do about why we should keep things that we don't even like.
I know. All right. So, and I think you've already mentioned, like, these rules and these principles that you're talking about, they can adapt to any style, any situation that we find ourselves in. Trends. You said you love trends. So tell us about ones that you knew would fade, like things that were exciting and they're gone and you knew it, and also some trends that you hope will stick around.
Well, I think we have to be smart about the way that we use trends. And, you know, word on the street is you don't want to invest heavily in a trend unless you're willing to change it in a few years or sell your house and let the new owners deal with it. So, you know, do I love the big veiny marble? I think it's gorgeous. Am I putting that on the bar that I'm doing for my husband? No, I'm doing Carrera because it's timeless. And my house is 100 years old and she wants real timeless things in here. It just works with her. So when it comes to a trend, I'm going to get the pillow, you know, with the fun little block pattern. I'm going to maybe do peel and stick wallpaper. I might do a color because it's easy to paint over, but I'm too lazy and I'm not a DIYer enough to change things that quickly. So you kind of have to know yourself and know, but I don't poo-poo on anyone that loves a trend and wants to go after it.
Yeah. Yeah. When we did our renovation, the big question was we were looking at sofas, and I have friends that actively have my best friend has her own design firm. And the conversation was, do I want like a $3,000 couch that's going to be like trendy, get beat up, and then I'm going to replace, or do I want to make an investment in a couch like she would provide for her clients where it's going to be the one I have for the next 20 years? And I was like, yeah, no, we're not doing that.
So you got which one?
Yeah, the cheaper one.
Okay.
And it's been great. I mean, I got it off Joybird and I was able to make it fit exactly for my space, which I love doing, customizing it. And it wasn't that high of a price point for what I was getting. And we still love the couch, but I wasn't ready to pick the forever couch, you know? And so I don't mind, you know, spending some money on things that I might replace in 5 or 10 years, because that might be okay, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So what are some common mistakes or pitfalls that people make when decorating their homes?
Well, it's not sexy to talk about, but I think the common mistake is waiting. I think it's so much better to make a decision and try something than to do nothing, to try something and get it wrong, because then you learn about yourself. Mm-hmm. You learn that you hate dark colors, or you learn that you hate to paint, or you learn that you love wallpaper or whatever it is, or hiring out. Mm-hmm. You know, we cannot make any progress. Even I think making a decision that feels wrong is progress when compared to doing nothing. So that's probably my biggest regret with our 15 houses, is even when we were renting, I continued to find myself waiting on the next house. And then suddenly I was like, hold on, my kids are growing up and they're growing up in a house that doesn't feel homey because I'm waiting until we buy a house. Like, I can switch out the chandeliers. I'll put the old chandelier in the attic. And then when we move out in a year, Chad will hook it back up. And so I finally just decided, I'm going to take control of what I have control of with the limited budget I have and make it feel homey. And I am so glad that I did.
Mm-hmm. I think back to some of the things that I hesitated on, or where I felt like were huge risks. And I'm not talking about like they're avant-garde or bold colors. I just mean some things that I like overthought and I finally did them. And those are the things that people compliment me most on. And I get frustrated because I doubted myself.
Yeah.
And you know, I do think of time that I wasted just worrying about, is this going to be the right choice? Am I going to love this? Are people going to like it? That's something I used to get caught up in, is like, what good does it do if I like it, if people come over and they don't like it? And then that kind of something I had to address with myself. Okay, so can you share some quick tips for our listeners that they can immediately implement to enhance their living spaces? Things that aren't super high commitment, that they're not going to stress out or overthink about, but then they can start to see a noticeable change in their home.
Yeah, I think, you know, let me just go back to myself. The biggest things that made a difference in my house, number one was nailing that scale. To nail that scale, to get things and choose to buy the larger items. So if I was in need of a vase or like a plant container, what I used to do would, I would go to Hobby Lobby or I would go to Target and think, well, here's a candlestick for $4, a little bitty candlestick. And I get it home, put it on my mantle, and it makes zero visual impact at all. So then I think, well, I must need 30 more candlesticks. Now I have learned. Instead, if I just start with a little bit larger item, it actually brings in visual impact. It reads as style because it's like kind of a little bit of a risk. So if I'm going to get a planter, I'm going to get a big urn and put a big plant in it. And now I have one large thing and it fills the space visually. So then I don't naturally, you know, a lot of us, we might feel like we don't know a lot about design and making decisions. But a lot of us know when maybe something is too small. And what we do is we say, well, I need more. That's how accidental gallery walls happen. We hang a little tiny piece of art up and we're like, oh, that looks weird over my gigantor sofa. Yeah. I guess I need 39 more pieces of art. No. Find a better place for that piece of art and get one piece that is the right size. Hang a big mirror or a quilt or a tapestry. Find something large. Ultimately, I find that it does save even money if, you know, I'm worried about that, just to find those big pieces. As someone who considers herself a cozy minimalist, it feels good to have less items in my house, but have them all really read as a specific style. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just an easier way to kind of feel like your room is finished and full.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a fantastic tip. And I would absolutely agree with that. That, like I said, that the places where I've just went for it. I've always been happy with.
Yes.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm so glad we get to talk about your new book, and I am excited for our readers to get it and to get it myself. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You can find Mike Lynn at thenester.com. She's also on Instagram as The Nester and on Facebook as The Nesting Place. I'll link to all of that, plus where you can find her new book, House Rules, in the show notes. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If so, I'd like to ask a favor. Can you head over to iTunes and leave us a review? Besides sharing this podcast with your friends, leaving a review is one of the most effective ways that you can support us and help get the word out about the incredible resources we have to offer. I'm passionate about helping families thrive, and your reviews help families find us. And remember, family culture isn't about perfect, it's about purpose.